This is In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle on News Talk 760 WJR, presented by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Now here's Marie Osborne.
One of the biggest scandals in Lansing history is unfolding, and it has unfolded this week. Representative Todd Corser, embroiled in a sex scandal with another state rep, Cindy Gamrat, joining us to talk a little bit about the implications of a scandal like this. Tim Kiska, associate professor at U of M Dearborn. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Marie.
Hey, have you ever, and I mean, you've been doing this a long time, observing politics and politicians, have you ever seen anything quite like this?
No, I think that, and the thing about this is it just keeps getting worse. So go figure.
Well,
I've never seen anything quite like this.
When we come back, this affair landed on the Jimmy Fallon show. When we come back, we'll have a clip of that. And Tim, we'd like you to listen to it. We'll talk more about this Lansing lover scandal like no other here on In the Mix.
This is a crazy story here. A Michigan state representative named Todd Corser is claiming that he intentionally leaked a fake news story about himself hiring a male prostitute to expose people blackmailing him over a real affair he was having with a woman. That was your idea? Oh, I got a good plan.
Well, I wasn't having an affair. I was actually hiring a male prostitute.
Have you read the papers this morning?
Can you believe how many people are getting male prostitutes?
It's all the rage.
I'm just kidding, honey. I was having an affair with a woman.
Oh, it's okay good. Now, honey. Yeah, don't worry about it. That's much easier, yeah.
Jeez. Yep, on Jimmy Fallon, the story of the two state representatives in Lansing who had an affair and the cover-up that ensued, a big scandal unfolding in Lansing this week, making Jimmy Fallon. Our guest, Tim Kiska, associate professor at the University of Michigan, Dearborn, observing politics for a few decades now. And Tim, it's not a good thing if you make it on Jimmy Fallon, right?
No. 90% of the time, the answer is no, it's not. And you don't want to be there. He doesn't hand out awards for good behavior most of the time.
Right, you don't want to be fodder. We were discussing about whether or not this was the biggest Lansing scandal ever.
There was another situation where a woman walked into the Detroit Free Press newsroom one day, and it was in the 40s, and she was apparently the paramour of somebody, and before it was all over, there were might have been a dozen or maybe even more state reps who ended up in the clinker.
Oh, really?
This woman came in with a bag full of stuff into the Free Press newsroom. Everybody thought she was a bag woman, and then pretty soon everybody was going to jail.
So let's talk a little bit about this particular situation between Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat. These are two state legislators. These are Republicans. They are Tea Partiers. They ran on that platform and were, by all measure, fairly successful in their tenure in Lansing. It had been a not-so-secret that these two had been having an affair. So what's happened here is the problem, again, with the cover-up, right, Tim?
That's right. You know, if they had just done this, you know, on their own without involving anybody, any their offices or their staff, let's put it this way, Marie, you've got a whole 110 people in the state house who are away from home days at a time up in Lansing. Unfortunately, the opportunity for fooling around is there. And I know for a fact that some people take advantage of this, but they're smart enough, they're professional enough, if you've been around long enough to know how to do this without attracting anybody's attention. These folks, and I think Nolan Finley had a very good column on this, which is talking about this is what you have when you get rookies involved.
Right. Term limits.
Somebody who's been a pro, this probably wouldn't have gotten this far.
Well, you know, look, an affair is always not optimal, as we can all agree on. Todd Corser telling his staff members allegedly to send out a bogus email accusing him of a porn addiction and paying for sex with a man outside of a Lansing nightclub in hopes that it would, you know, sort of gloss over the fact that he'd had this affair. So, you know, what is the lesson, the takeaway lesson here for other lawmakers and people in politics? I mean, people are sick of this. The electorate is just sick of all of this.
Well, it seems to me that there are two takeaways on this. Number one, when you get elected to the state house or you get some kind of position of responsibility, people do pay attention to your behavior. You know, it's part of the job. And so when people like Todd Corser or Cindy Gamert are somewhat stunned that people are actually were paying attention to this, that comes with the job. And the other one was obviously the cover-up. If they had just been a little bit more discreet, once you start claiming moral superiority, I think that's fair. Certainly to Todd Corser, when he, you know, throwing God around in a lot of his press releases and that sort of thing. You're holding yourself to a higher standard, and you better be careful. That's what got them. That's the other takeaway here. You know, I think if they would have come out and just said, we're sinners, we are weak, we screwed up big time, we're going to spend a lot of time, you know, trying to make it right with our family and do our jobs and serve our constituency. Well, I think, I'm not sure people would have forgotten about it, but I don't think this thing would have kept rolling for, how long has it been going, Marie? About a week now?
Oh, at least,
like
well, it's been a week, and then, of course, you know, making the national news. I mean, it's been on CNN. It's been on a lot of the cable news outlets, of course. Let's talk a little bit about larger implications here for, let's say, the next election, the Tea Partiers, the Republicans. I mean, what are the Democrats going to do about this? What do you think the implications are in state politics on this?
This happening on the tail end of that May election on the road taxes, where people just, I mean, 80%, Marie, you can't get 80% of the electorate to vote on it.
Anything. All right.
And here it is. So I think that that's a major indicator that, A, people aren't really high on the state house right now, or this, you know, or the state senate either, but the state house in particular. And then these two come along and screw up. I think let's just throw a little more kindling on the fire here. Why don't we? And then that's kind of what happened,
I think. All right. So free advice then to potential candidates. You've observed this for a long time, politics, politicians in general. I mean, what do you think is going to be key for someone running to present themselves or as a platform, let's say, to be successful?
You know, I think that as opposed to, you know, if you're a Republican trying to prove how conservative you are, if you're a Democrat trying to, you know, prove how liberal you are, I mean, I think this time around it's almost a matter of, you know, I'm going to get in there. I'm not going to play partisan politics. I'm just going to try to get the job done for you. I have a feeling that this time around that might work.
I like
because
that.
I think, you know, that's what it comes down to. That's what you do every day, you know, the week over at WJR. You get in there and you get it done, as opposed to all the other attendant drama that might, you know, which these two are bringing on themselves. So that's what I think.
We're only human. We all love the drama, don't we? That was great advice that, you know, I'm going to be your man or woman and I'm going to go to Lansing and I'm just going to get to work and get the job done. Nice advice, free advice today, Tim Kiska. Tim Kiska, Associate Professor at U of M Dearborn, discussing the Todd Corser, Cindy Gamert scandal. This is not over by any means. We might have you back, Tim, to talk about it again. Thanks for joining us here on In the Mix.
In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Once again, here's Marie Osborne.
When you think auto racing, especially Indy racing, you don't think women in that sport. They're few and far between. Joining us is Beth Peretta, creator of Grace Auto Sports, the first all-female IndyCar Series racing team. Their plans are to compete in the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500 at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Beth, start your engines. We're so glad you could join us here on In the Mix.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Where did this idea start for an all-women team?
Well, my partner, Adrian Sussman, works in the UK, and he represents many drivers, and he represents Catherine Legg. And he was in pit lane during an F1 race and saw that there were a few female engineers. And he thought, wouldn't that be amazing if there were a whole team of women? And he called me when I was working for Fiat Chrysler at the time, running the motorsport program, and he called me to sort of run the idea by me to say, is this crazy? I think this would be a pretty neat idea. And I thought about it, and at first I thought, yeah, you are a little crazy. And then I thought about it some more, and I thought, you know what? Not only is it not crazy, there's a lot that we could do with this. So we started talking it out, and that was probably November, December of 2014, and the idea took off from there.
Now, the idea then is to have all women behind the scenes and all the support staff. What about drivers? That as well?
Yes, our driver is Catherine Legg, and we assigned her to be part of the program. And what this will do, too, is showcase most the average fan might not realize what goes into what's behind the scenes of a racing driver. It's kind of like when you look at a football team, you focus on the quarterback, but everybody knows that there's all these other integral players to the team. And certainly a big race fan knows that, but the sort of, you know, kind of casual fan wouldn't necessarily know what's behind the scenes getting that car just onto the grid. So by showcasing all these women, we're also going to showcase all the roles of the team. And so we're in addition to the driver, we've got the engineering staff, the mechanics, the crew over the wall doing the pit stops. So you'll really be able to see all these women kind of at work, but you'll also get to maybe notice what comprises a full racing team.
Beth Peretta, the creator of Grace Auto Sports. Beth, where are you going to get your talent for all this? If women are so few and far between in this industry, where are you going to be finding the women to participate in this company of yours?
Well, this is it. People think that there's not a lot of women participating. And I want to say, too, the reason we're doing this is not because we're not welcome. We very much are. This isn't a sort of situation where we weren't allowed on another team, so we're going to start our own and, you know, and prove them wrong. That's not it at all. Many of us, most of us, already work in racing. And the environment is actually very welcoming. But it's really more a situation where these women are just working on all different teams and different series. So there are women actively working in racing, but because they're scattered around, you don't really notice it. So by putting them all together on one team, you'll see that there are women. You'll see that it's a possibility. And really, that's what gets us back to the real initiative behind all of this, and that's to show girls and young women what opportunities are available to them. And we're using the example of a racing team, but it's really to show girls that technical careers are a possibility.
Overall, why do you think we're still having so much trouble recruiting young women into the tech fields? I mean, clearly you're in the tech field, you're in a field that's non-traditional for women. What drove you to that field, and what are we still doing wrong?
My background is actually more business, and to be fair, there aren't many women in business either, so I'll definitely, you know, take that argument across to my discipline as well. But and I'm paraphrasing and probably not that well. If you noticed, there was recently the woman who was just appointed a coach in the NFL. Somebody mm-hmm. asked her a similar question: why is there such a struggle for women in these sort of in equal roles? And her comment was, respectfully, often it's the media that, especially if you look at the past 10 years, the things that have been celebrated among women and what have been considered achievement are based on appearance, achievement based on, you know, you look at people that are quote unquote celebrities today who are celebrities for being famous. They're not necessarily of having a talent. And so by doing that, we're creating these messages, and we forget. I mean, as adults, we receive messages very differently than, you know, than a fifth grader does. And you think about what are we teaching that fifth grade girl to think that there's value, and you can have 40 million followers on Instagram and Twitter if you're taking pictures of yourself. Your only job is taking pictures of yourself.
Right, the Kardashian effect.
Exactly.
Then, right.
Yeah, and yeah. What does that tell you? It doesn't reinforce that you should go to school and learn a skill and that you have value. And that's really, I mean, not to make a race team sound very lofty, but that's really kind of the impetus behind this and what was really the kick in the pants for all of us. And when I then called all these women to be on a team, they all, there wasn't even a hesitation. They're like, yep, we want to do this, because they want to be that, basically that role model or that example that girls can kind of see and hopefully follow the path of.
Well, but this is nothing new, certainly, Beth. I mean, when I was in school, girls were never encouraged to do anything outside of the traditional roles for women. And the girls who became homecoming queens, those were the ones we looked up to. And I remember when I was in high school, although I really didn't have an interest in it, I happened to have gone to a high school that had a great auto shop program, and I'm talking an awesome auto shop program. And so I happened to ask one of the boys students who had actually graduated from high school through that program and was in college in an engineering program. I said, you know, I'm thinking I might want to take a class in auto mechanics. What do you think? And he said to me, You know, well, Marie, I just wouldn't suggest that. You know, when I was in the class, there was one girl, and she was just really weird. We just thought she was really weird. So that was, yeah, that was the reaction we get. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's just even among students themselves.
Exactly.
That give you that sort of disencouragement, if you will.
Absolutely. But we have to, you know, the more that we can kind of put into that funnel, the better chances that we're going to have that it's going to stick. The other thing, too, we know that there's, if you look at the engineering fields and the technical fields, there is a decline. And especially it's something that is affecting Detroit, where you have all these very skilled engineers who will be retiring, so just naturally getting out of the workforce, and they're not being hired at the same rate. So there's actually going to be a shortage of engineers, and that's a critical problem. I mean, so many jobs have been shipped off to other regions of the world. And the other thing is, so many people have gone into virtual engineering. Like they can create a virtual bridge, but I don't know if people can actually invent create the robot that is building your, you know, Chevy Tahoe.
Right.
And we really need to get back to that.
So the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500, that's when you want to debut Grace Auto Sports, right?
We actually will debut sooner than that. The intention is to run a few races before the 500. We don't really want the 500 to be our first race, of course, just because we need to be able to get the kinks out.
Work the bugs out, right?
Exactly. So we'll probably, our hope is that we'll start when the season starts and run all the races through the 500. And our intention, I should say, is ideally to run the full season. And hopefully this is a team that will be around for years and years. So the focus was to get us to make sure that we got on the grid by the time the 100th running ran.
And that's next year, right?
That is next May.
I have to tell you, are you getting enough press on this? Because I just really haven't seen a lot of press on this for you.
We did at the announcement. We did the announcement, and it's that mix of racing press. It was everywhere. So that's different, right? The little tiny world that we live in, it was like you couldn't go anywhere without seeing it for a few weeks there. But it's starting to get in the mainstream press. And the good news is we are working actually on a docuseries with a Hollywood filmmaker, gentleman by the name of David Anspaugh, who did the movies Hoosiers and Rudy, is now wanted to make a film about us. It's now evolving and maybe kind of a long-term sort of docuseries to document this. And the intention is that it will be distributed through mainstream media, the idea of getting it to a wider audience, because obviously this is a story that's way beyond racing.
Well, Beth Peretta, we want to welcome you to mainstream media here on WJR. We're so glad you could join us today. Creator of Grace Auto Sports, the first all-women's racing team. I can't wait to see how this team does.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, we're going from the pit stop to the skies. One of the best places to enjoy the stars of the night, right here in Michigan. When we come back, we'll tell you where that is. Stay with us here on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle.
The surface of the Earth is the shore of the cosmic ocean. On this shore, we've learned most of what we know. Recently, we've waded a little way out, maybe ankle deep, and the water seems inviting. Some part of our being knows this is where we came from. We long to return. And we can't, because the cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are a way for the cosmos to know itself.
If you're a stargazer, this week has been phenomenal. The Perseid meteor showers have been upon us, lots of photos on social media, and we thought this would be a perfect time to talk to the director of Michigan's Dark Sky Park in Emmett County, Mary Stewart Adams. Thank you for joining us here on In the Mix.
Thanks for having me.
Wow, what a week it's been for you guys. I can't tell you how many of my friends have been at your park this week and observing what's been going on in the heavens.
You know, we have really enjoyed large, really enthusiastic crowds. That's been really marvelous.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Tell me about how this Dark Sky Park came about. And a lot of people, let me start with this, don't know why it's called a dark sky park.
Right. That's the thing that can be confusing, because when we hear the word park, we oftentimes will think of amusements and things that you can do on the ground, and it's confusing to think about doing that in the sky. But a dark sky park is a place where we've protected the natural darkness over the land. So you have a piece of land, and you make sure that there's no light shooting up into the night sky so that you can always see a naturally dark environment where the stars are brilliant.
So there's not a lot of man-made light, or some people call it light pollution, but there isn't light, the ground light in this
right.
area.
Right, so there can be some ground light. The better way to say this is there's no artificial light.
I see.
So this designation is made by the International Dark Sky Association in Tucson, Arizona. So they set up the criteria, and Emmett County followed their very rigorous process to get the designation.
Oh, so you had to go through a process then to be awarded this designation.
Yes. I mean, I think communities can protect their natural darkness of their own volition, and you don't have to go through that process. But I led that initiative, and it was very evident to me that getting that designation would draw a lot of attention and give us the opportunity to talk about why dark sky advocacy is so important.
Well, and there are a few spots in the country where the skies, where the heavens, you just get this magnificent view of the heavens. And, of course, now this spot is one of them. Why did you make this a personal quest of yours? You said you thought this would be important. Why did you take on this quest?
You know, I graduated with a degree in English literature and have been
very much
involved in the humanities approach to understanding how we language our understanding of our place in our celestial environment. And I look at it in terms of how the thinking influences the cultural life, so the architecture and the art and the poetry. These things are inspired by what we understand is our relationship to the night sky, and we've been striving for that understanding since the get-go. I mean, for thousands of years, we build monuments and pyramids and cathedrals and telescopes and satellites, and all out of the same striving to understand how can knowing about the celestial world above me tell me more about who I am on the earth.
And where we belong in the whole scheme of things, right?
Right.
Isn't that
and it's not really about trying to force a belief on anyone, but just to try to uncover how much majesty and creativity has come out of that striving. Sometimes it's the highest achievements in humanity have been born out of that striving. So that's what really drives me.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the activities that took place this week, because I know you've had a lot of visitors this week at the park.
Yes.
What's it been like?
Well, you know, because of social media, you can access a lot of people very quickly, and the news about what's going on in the sky overhead is really, really of high interest to most people. The Perseid meteor shower came to its peak. We also had the waning crescent moon, so there was no moonlight cast into the sky. So the word went out early that this would be an exceptional year for the Perseid shower. So we've enjoyed thousands of visitors.
Now, did I read somewhere that the lights on the Mackinac Bridge were also turned off?
Yes, you did. You know, we host this really lovely community-wide event that we call Lights Out Across the Straits, and then Lights Out Across the Little Traverse Bay. And we get the communities of Mackinac City, St. Ignace, Petoskey, and Harbor Springs to turn their lights off to see which community can get darkest at the time of the peak of the shower. So it's really to raise awareness about the shower, but then also to raise awareness about our use of light at night. And the Bridge Authority participates with us, which really makes it a treat.
And so what was it like? What did it feel like to look at that?
You know, I'll explain it to you. We also do a cruise out on the Straits of Mackinac.
Aww.
So we're going out there, cruising west under the bridge. The deck lights are on, so the traffic that's going across is they're still in a safe environment. They can see where they're driving. But the cable lights are off, and it's very unusual to see that across the straits. When the bridge lights do something, then everybody takes note. But we set out, it was cloudy. By the time we got west of the bridge, it was clear. We saw falling stars. We saw the Milky Way. The aurora showed up. It was just an unparalleled evening.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I had a friend there, and I said, I am very, very jealous.
Yeah.
Very jealous. Mary Stewart Adams is joining us. She's the director of Michigan's Dark Sky Park in Emmett County. This is a couple miles west of Mackinac City, if you want to make a plan to head up there. So this week was obviously prime time to be up there, Mary. What about for the rest of the summer? Are there times that people should kind of maybe think about planning to come up that way?
Yeah, I mean, it all can be determined by what your interested in. The park is always open and it's free. You don't have to pay a fee to get in. This is a commitment made by the Emmett County Board of Commissioners that this land be available and accessible to the public. So we have still some activity of the Perseid meteor shower well into the 20th of August. So you can still see it. We're past the peak, but that doesn't mean that you won't see some stars falling through the sky. And then the moon, once it's new, we're coming into a phase where we have the crescent that's setting not long after sunset. And that's really beautiful to see because we're right on the shores of Lake Michigan. So you see the moon setting into the lake is lovely as well.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about the park itself, the Headlands Park? And I hear that it's just a wonderful place to visit. You have accommodations there. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so we have the guest house there, which can be rented. It sleeps up to 22, and I can tell you that it's a very popular destination, and it's hard to get a reservation for any time yet this year. But you can get on the list. And also, the park itself is 600 acres. It's mostly forested, and it's untouched old-growth forest. So it gives you an experience of what the forest was like in this region of Michigan before the European settlers came in. So it's just a beautiful piece of property that way. We have 2 miles of shoreline on Lake Michigan, 5 miles of hiking trails. You can stay out all night to watch the stars at the Headlands, but you can't camp. And this kind of sounds contradictory, but what that means is no pitching tents, no building ground fires, but you can lay down a blanket or a sleeping bag and look up and watch the stars all night.
So you can really rough it, right?
Yes, you can. You are in a dark wilderness, and that's an important thing to know because we have no white light zones in the viewing area, so you don't disturb the night vision for others that are there.
Now, are there any other dark sky parks in Michigan?
There are not, as it's designated by the International Dark Sky Association, but because of our success in getting this designation in 2011, the following year, 2012, we were responsible for writing the legislation that was passed by the state to protect an additional 23,000 acres of Michigan state land. So that includes some of the state parks and some state forest land, and that legislation is pending amendment to include an additional 15,000 acres, so it's growing. And we also have now enjoyed the partnership of the National Park Service through their national park properties that are in Michigan. And so we've got a really wonderful dark sky advocacy thing going in Michigan right now.
And I have an unusual question for you in that I have been in New Mexico and Arizona and places like that in the West, where, in fact, when our kids were growing up, we would purposely take them out at night to look at the sky.
Yes,
because
yeah,
it's so unusual to see that. And does the sky look the same here in Michigan, or does altitude play in this? Do the lakes play into this at all?
Yeah, there are a lot of factors. You know, we can get more haze in the air because we're right on the shores of the lake, but that creates just a lovely setting. What I like to share with folks is that it really is about finding yourself with your feet on the ground in a certain environment. You know, we think that we're looking deep into space and we can use telescopes and we're looking, you know, very far away from us or back through history. But also studying the night sky and particularly the lore that's connected with it, so the story and the cultural tales, it really puts your feet right on the ground, right where you are, and can awaken the sense of a bad experience. So dark skies can work anywhere.
Oh,
it should be
cool.
Practiced and advocated for everywhere.
Well, Mary Adams, thank you so much for joining us here on In the Mix. You're really enticing all of us to look up and really enjoy the night sky in a very special way. We wish you continued success.
Yeah, thank you for your interest and thanks for having me.
Coming up next here on In the Mix, a little Foreigner. Stay with us.
The Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Sponsored by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Here's Marie Osborne.
Yeah, that music means only one thing. Foreigner, one of the greatest rock bands in history. Tom Gimbel joining us, the guitarist for Foreigner. Tom, thank you so much for taking a moment to talk to us here on In the Mix.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You're in a long homestand here in Detroit with Kid Rock. You're opening for him the 18th, 19th, 21st, 22nd at the DTE Energy Music Theater. You know, we always ask when we talk to people who are in town with some of these big groups, so what's the Detroit crowd like?
Well, they have a reputation.
Basically, do tell.
It's so nice. Yeah, this is the one place where I can honestly answer that question.
Okay.
Because when people say, what's your favorite place to play? Everyone says Detroit. And that's, I don't think it's like a best-kept secret, but it's really a fact of life. All of our favorite shows have always been here. The people that are here have always been our favorite. This is the rock and roll city, and it has the number one reputation.
I always think when artists say that, they're only trying to placate, you know, us, the media, interviewing them. But you seem more sincere. Let's just say it that way.
It is the truth.
So, Tom Gimbel, you joined the group 20 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so talk to us a little bit about how the group has changed. What's it like to be a part of a legendary rock band that just kind of reinvents itself still has its foot in, you know, one foot in its history and one foot in its future? What's that like?
It's really a lot of fun for us because Mick Jones, the founder, songwriter, creator of Warner, he changes over time. His guitar playing has changed. His sound has changed. And the band has changed a little bit in following his lead that way. So he's gotten tougher. His guitar sound is tougher. Times have gotten tougher. You know, it's a grittier Foreigner now than it was 20 years ago. And that's just changing with the times.
Oh, it is.
I like that. Yeah, I really like that. I like evolving and seeing things get crunchier. You know, Mick has got this really vicious guitar sound. It's awesome to be a part of a band that just sounds tough and is still, as you say, has the roots in classic rock.
Now, you have a long history yourself, a personal history of playing with some great groups, of course, Aerosmith in your past, just to name some of what you've done. What were your influences and what brings you to this day? I mean, you're still doing it. A lot of people just kind of drop out. Do you kind of pinch yourself every once in a while?
No, I think there's a lot of people like me still in this business. We just have the rock and roll in our soul. I've always loved rock and music ever since I was a kid. First hearing Johnny Cash, and then I was thinking about, you know, we talked a lot about Motown being on the radio in the 60s. That was a huge part of it. And also Creedence. The radio was full of Creedence Clearwater Revival for
you
a lot of years.
You better believe it.
Yeah. And when I hear their songs now, I go, oh, yeah, well, this is the stuff we grew up on. And there was a lot of that. And then you had Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears. It was a wonderful time. A lot of deep baritone singers. You know, those guys.
Yeah,
I found out later they were trying to sound like Ray Charles. But, you know, the guy in Chicago, Ray Charles was his hero. And everyone that was singing like a Tom Jones, Jim Morrison, all these great deep voice singers that were trying to do a Ray Charles thing. So I was a fan of all that stuff. When I was a little kid, Stevie Wonder was my favorite. Nowadays, it's Marvin Gaye, Al Green. Those are my favorites. And I love that music has intertwined. Like that kind of original element still shows up in rock music. Like Mick Jones, I think Marvin Gaye is one of his favorites too. So,
you know, I always wonder about this because my kids love, I mean, they of course have their own music that they enjoy listening to, but they love Motown. They love all the, you know, Johnny Cash, all that stuff you mentioned. Foreigner, they love that. It's like it's timeless. So what makes the sound timeless?
Probably the fact that it has soul woven into it. Mick Jones is a very soulful guy, and also Lou Gramm's. A lot of these songs they wrote together.
Sure.
So you're getting a double shot there. These are two of the most soulful people I've ever met, and so it's right there. It's all the real stuff. It's heart and soul poured into these songs, and sincerity. The lyrics very direct. You know, nothing lofty, and nothing like talking about imaginary lakes or anything.
Now,
it's like someone talking to you, you know? It's like he's talking to you.
I have to tell you, our producer, who happens to be a 20-something, said to me that her friends have gone and they've seen the show open, and they said you guys killed it. Just killed it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're so happy that people are rocking out with us. And Kid, speaking of rock, and Kid Rock is amazing. Phenomenal performance every night, and everyone in his band, his whole organization are so cool. this is the best time imaginable we're having this summer. So we're just totally, totally grateful.
And how unusual is it for you to have such a long, I want to just say a homestand, but like in one place like this, for you guys to
very
be...
Very unusual.
It is unusual.
For any band. It just shows you how great Kid Rock is and his connection, his commitment to his fans, and that works both ways. You know, that's a two-way love affair.
Right.
As it should be. There's a lot of loyalty going in both directions, and it's really cool to be a part of it.
You know, I know you're asked this question a lot, but I do have to ask it also. I mean, how do you keep it fresh time after time? How do you keep it fresh for yourself to give it your all every time you go on stage?
It's so easy, Marie. I just let the music take over. It kind of washes over you, like jumping in the ocean and a giant wave takes you in the curl and spins you around like you're in a washing machine. That's what this music does to me. That's what playing a rock guitar riff, like Double Vision, you know, with a thumping band. We got Chris Frazier on drums, Jeff Tolson on bass, not to mention Kelly Hansen starts singing the melodies to perfection. That is just as good, you know, I don't have to do anything. It just takes over. So we're really lucky that I love every one of these songs.
Have you been able to visit any of the Detroit hot spots while you've been here? What have you been doing with yourself when you're not on stage?
We are rehearsing for an acoustic show that's coming up soon.
Really?
At the Ford Museum. That's an acoustic show, and we're going to record a live CD there. It's a wonderful event. It's a benefit for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Fund,
right?
JDRF. And so we're rehearsing that, and when I get a little time, I'll sneak out to a golf course.
Gotta have golf, right?
This weather has been phenomenal.
Yeah, it's like this all year here in Michigan. I don't know if you know that or not.
I did read about that.
Right. Listen, I want to thank you for joining us here on In the Mix this afternoon. We love Foreigner. We're thrilled that you could spend a few minutes with us this afternoon.
Delighted to be here.
Tom Gimbel, guitarist for Foreigner. Let's take it out with a little bit of Foreigner here on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Rochelle will be back next week. We're glad you could join us. Please keep in touch with us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our thanks this afternoon to Laura Hessen, our producer, Mark Blackwell, our engineer. See you again next week.